away from tradition. Cause when we be out, girl is pulling me out. You wouldn't believe how we wow. Burn it till it's burned out, turn it till it's turned out. Act up from northwest, east side. Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoked, get it started, get it started, get it started.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belaine. With me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Mr. Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock, and we'd love to hear from you. So if you want to chime in, give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And now, Mr. Kavanaugh. You as a young man, did you misbehave?
Well, did he?
That's yet to be seen, actually. of course I'm missing my... That's about it. So Brett Kavanaugh, who is a Supreme Court nominee, is going through a little bit of a rough patch because a former classmate of his has accused him of sexually assaulting her 30 years ago, I believe it was.
Yes.
30 years ago. Yes, the assertion is that other people heard about and discussed the incident. Her name is Christine Blasey Ford. And she said that in high school, there was an incident of him sexually assaulting her at a drunken high school party. He has denied the allegation, but of course, especially given the current climate involving such things, got him in a little bit of a pickle.
Yeah. He denies being at the party. Two other people who may have been at the party also deny being at the party. Blasey Ford can't seem to recall exactly when the party took place, how many people were in the room, or why the party was happening. Or even where the party took place. This was sent in a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein. And Senator Feinstein basically looked at it and handed it off to the FBI and said, that's it, I'm washing my hands of this. So last week, as the hearings with Judge Kavanaugh are calming down, Democrats start making noise about this mysterious letter that's out there, which proceeds to blow up over the weekend, culminating in Blasey Ford giving an interview to the Washington Post where she laid out the details, as she recalls them, of this attack and basically said, Brett Kavanaugh did this to me. So we have a witness or we have a victim who is coming forward and speaking her truth and should be believed. Because she is speaking her truth. We also have a set of vague and shifting allegations against which you cannot expect anyone to defend themselves.
Well, and what's difficult too, especially, like I said, given the... I hate that I'm even saying this, but given how trendy sexual assault allegations are right now, you have a lot of people hopping on this gravy train, like trying to become a part of it. Like this woman, Christina Miranda King, she came out saying, I remember hearing about that assault. Like, she was a year or so behind me. I didn't really know her, but I remember her, and that totally happened.
Yeah.
And she posted...
Thank you for your reliable testimony.
Yeah, and then she posted it on Facebook. This is what I love. She posted it on Facebook... and then subsequently deleted it, like it posted this allegation, like this, or this confirmation of this confirmation of the hearsay that leads people to believe the allegation might be true.
Yeah.
But then has since taken it down and then said on Twitter that she deleted it because, quote, it served its purpose. And I'm now dealing with a slew of requests for interviews. Organizing how I want to proceed. Was not ready for that. Not sure I'm interested in pursuing. Thanks for reading. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
And then she later posted on Facebook to all media, I will not be doing any more interviews. No more circus for me. To clarify my post, I do not have firsthand knowledge of the incident that Dr. Christine Blasey Ford mentions, and I stand by my support for Christine. That's it. I don't have any more to say on the subject. Well, then why did you say anything in the first place?
Well, because fame and fortune.
Yeah,
know, and
but it's, I mean, but that's
I'm
like,
going to be a celebrity.
But that's what I'm saying is that, and like you said, I am the last person to, if Christine Blasey Ford says something happened, it is her prerogative to be open about that, and it is only respectful to her and what may have happened that we not question it, that we not assume that she's just pulling this out of her butt and that she's making this up.
As I said, this is her truth.
Yes.
Okay? And as her truth, it has validity, and she should be believed. Now, is her truth the facts of what happened? Not necessarily.
Yes.
And this is why what you would have happen ideally in this situation is she comes forth and tells her story and provides details that are fixed, that aren't moving from place to place. Mm. You can't walk into this situation and say, oh, well, you know, he attacked me on the 14th. And then he says, well, on the 14th, I was out of the country.
Oh, it was actually the 17th.
He attacked me on the 21st.
Yeah.
It's every time I read an account of this story, it has shifted. And every time someone is named in the investigation in this story, they either have no knowledge of this party ever taking place, or they say they weren't there. They didn't see it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, and again,
that does not mean that none of this happens.
Yes.
It just means that Blasey Ford's recall of what happened is hazy at best.
Yes. And now, and accordingly, there shouldn't be people like this. I don't even want to dignify saying her name. But this other classmate, these other classmates that have come out supporting her or saying, oh, yeah, I was there. Or, oh, yeah, I heard about it.
Yeah.
It's you're only muddling the situation further.
Yeah, please shut up and go seek your attention elsewhere because you're not helping.
And they did Senate Judiciary Chairman has set 10 a.m. Friday as the deadline for Christine Blasey Ford to respond to the request to speak to the committee, like specifically with facts regarding
now,
the sexual abuse.
This is the other interesting aspect of this, is Chuck Grassley for 2 days, Sunday and Monday, and part of Tuesday, was trying to get a hold of Blasey Ford to set up some kind of an interview. And they've given her every option. She can interview in public. She can interview in private. She can speak to members of Congress. She can speak to a lawyer. Whatever she wants.
Yeah.
Any way that you want to do this, we want to hear your story, is what they're saying. Her lawyers responded last night with the usual, well, she's been harassed out of her house, and we're not talking to anybody until the FBI conducts an investigation, and she's not prepared to tell her story on such short notice. Okay, let's break that down a little bit. I believe wholeheartedly that she's being harassed and she's getting death threats, and all of the morons on the internet are doing all of the stupid, meaningless things that they do, and people who are easily frightened get scared when that happens. When strangers are like threatening you on Twitter and calling your house and hanging up, it's scary. I get that. As to point two, the FBI is not going to investigate this. Okay, it was handed to the Justice Department and the FBI by Senator Dianne Feinstein. And what the FBI did was add a note to their comments and their vetting of Judge Kavanaugh saying that this has been alleged. It is not a federal crime. The FBI exists to investigate federal crime. Mm. A high school sexual assault that took place in Maryland is not a federal crime. If you would like to have the Maryland State Police investigate it, you could do that. If you want to have the local police investigate it, you can do that. This is not the FBI's job, and I am sick and tired of watching senators, Democrat senators, get on TV and act like they don't know what the FBI does.
And I was going to say, that's the thing.
You look like idiots.
You know what your job is? Obviously, you know what theirs is, too. Well, that's the thing is that...
If you've been in Washington, D.C. for 30 years and you don't know that the FBI only investigates federal crime, you've been in Washington, D.C. for 30 years too long.
Yeah, basically, the FBI came out and said that the only way they can do anything is if the White House specifically says, like, you guys have to look into this.
The president can command the FBI.
I was going to say, that's just a presidential order, but... Potentially, like without that, the only role that they have is to in anything regarding this matter is only to use it as a background check, like into him, his character to be a Supreme Court nominee. They can't come out and be like, "Hey, we're the FBI. We're going to arrest you for an assault that might have happened 30 years ago." Like,
let me ask you a question, Shay. Do you think investigating a high school party that took place 34 years ago is a good use of FBI resources?
I don't think that's why they went to Quantico. No.
Yeah. No, I don't think so either. And the other thing that these senators seem to be willfully ignorant of, all of a sudden, very lately, is the fact that a congressional hearing, a congressional investigation, tends to be more thorough and more dangerous than an FBI investigation.
Yeah.
People lie to the FBI and get away with it all the time. You lie to Congress, you're in a world of hurt.
And beyond that, too, typically especially given, like I said, given the climate that we're in right now regarding things like this, an FBI investigation, even if this was the proper scenario in which to launch one, they usually keep things pretty under wraps. It's usually not a congressional hearing that's on the news. Like that's, you know, it's painful because, I mean, obviously, you know, I usually lean left, but it's painful because these are people who, this is their profession. Like, it would be like a science teacher not knowing Newton's laws of motion. Like, it's to have senators come out and blatantly just not understand how the due process in the situation even works is gross.
It's
embarrassing.
We're just simple country senators. We don't have the power and the influence of the FBI. Give me a break.
Give me a break. I mean, honest to God, it would be like the Marines being like, the Air Force, they're the other guys with boats, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is baseline just understanding what other people that work for the federal government do.
It's political grandstanding. and the thing about it is, it insults the intelligence of the American people. Because the sheep that blindly follow these politicians may lap this up and throw money at them when they put out all of their hysterical calls. But the vast majority of Americans look at this and cock their heads to the side and they're like, really? Really? You're going to tell me, Maxine Waters, that you don't know the power that a congressional committee has? You're going to tell me that you don't know that the FBI doesn't investigate high school parties from 34 years ago?
I was going to say, I just imagine working for the FBI and having somebody like drop that case, drop like a request for an investigation into this on my desk. I would just laugh in their face.
Yeah.
Like, no, you know that I have like 10 people who are most wanted in the country to focus on right now, right?
So should we drop all the terrorism investigations and go look into this high school party from the 80s? Is that our directive here, Mr. President? Yeah, no one is authorizing that. And it's stupid to even ask for it. Get the local police to investigate. Hire an investigator if you want to. Your Congress investigated yourself. You have the full resources of the federal government. You have subpoena power. Everyone in America is terrified to sit in front of a congressional committee. You don't need the FBI. Do you? Now, Here's a third part of the statement from the lawyers that's ridiculous. She is not prepared to testify. She's not prepared to speak to Congress. She needs more time. Well, she didn't need more time to sit down with the Washington Post and give them a blow-by-blow account of what happened. So what is the difference between that and sitting down with Congress and answering the same questions? Seems to me if you're going to go sit down with a newspaper of record in the United States, which is, one would think, if there were actual journalists working there, likely to investigate every aspect of your story instead of just writing down what you said and publishing as if it is fact. One would think that if you're ready for that, you're ready for Congress. I guess not. Congress is somehow more intimidating to Blasey Ford than the Washington Post, which says an awful lot about the Washington Post and what a joke the Washington Post has become. This whole thing is unraveling. And at the center of it is a woman who was sexually assaulted, who is not going to get any justice, who is not going to get a fair hearing, because everybody around this has politicized it and turned it into a circus. And the Democrats have been leading that charge. And I'm not sitting here as a partisan saying that. I'm sitting here as an observer saying this is what happened.
I was going to say, well, and that's the thing is before I became more, first of all, more attuned to just how each of the, I hate that there's two major political parties, but each of the major political parties holds themselves, but also, In terms of just the way that I view issues, the way that I view the way things should be handled, I used to identify as a Democrat, and once I became a bit more enlightened, I very much do not anymore.
You've joined the walkaway movement.
I am, yes. Like, I'm absolutely leaning liberal, but and
you can be liberal without being a Democrat.
I was going to say, that's the thing, is I used to think it was like, okay, I'm liberal, I'm a Democrat. I thought it was just a blanket, we're all under this umbrella together thing. Yeah.
Republicans like to talk about that big tent that doesn't exist
But that's the thing, is that both Democrats, both staunch Democrats and staunch Republicans have these ways about them that it's almost a naivety.
Yeah.
Where it's, okay, I'm going to pound my fist about this, and it doesn't matter if what I'm saying makes any sense whatsoever. And they both are guilty of it, but this is a perfect example of that, where it's like, but, okay, you heard the phrase sexual assault and decided to start beating down people's doors and yelling and screaming and waving your fist. Doing this based on very little evidence, very little actual context of what happened, very little apparent knowledge of if, again, not saying that this isn't true or at least that there isn't some truth to it, but approaching it in such a way that it feels like eighth graders arguing with each other in history class.
Could you imagine if Donald Trump came out and said, I want an FBI investigation? And the FBI said, that's not in our jurisdiction. The press would be having a field day. They'd be like, well, here's dumb Trump, doesn't understand what the FBI does. But the Democrats get to go on TV and radio over and over again. FBI investigation, FBI investigation, FBI investigation. This is not a federal case. This is not Anita Hill. Anita Hill was working for the federal government when Clarence Thomas harassed her. That is an important difference. Let me ask you this, Shay. Because this question to me cuts to the heart of the whole thing. If this is true, should Brett Kavanaugh be a Supreme Court justice?
That's a very good question. I mean, on the one hand, when I think of Supreme Court justices, I think of people who uphold the law. I think of people who have made a concerted effort through their entire lives to not only uphold the law, but to be examples of how to do so. So theoretically, no, he shouldn't, if this is true, because that is not just breaking the law, but it is, especially at such a young age, that is, I mean, that's setting a
So you're not
setting a precedent.
You're not giving a pass for high school. You're not giving a pass for like, oh, it was high school. You know, things happen.
I mean,
he was a good kid. I made a couple of mistakes.
No, I mean, the guy who sexually assaulted me in college, we were 18. Am I going to give him a pass just because we're in our 30s now? It's a matter of baseline character.
Yeah. I agree with you, by the way. I agree with you wholeheartedly on this. And, you know, having followed this, I haven't followed every moment of this in depth, but I've certainly paid attention to everything that's going on, everything that's been said. There is no doubt in my mind that Brett Kavanaugh is one of the finest jurists of his generation. This guy, I mean, you know lawyers, you know the law. Mm-hmm. This guy is like a hardcore law nerd. You know, this guy is,
I'm
like
related to a couple of those,
serious law geek, and he is very precise and very fair, and sees everything through that precision of language and that precision of construct that is the law.
I bet he loves Latin.
And in terms of that, there is no doubt in my mind that he is qualified, beyond qualified, and worthy of being an associate justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. If this is true, however, he must be withdrawn.
Yeah.
Because there is someone else out there who may not be equally as qualified in every aspect as Judge Kavanaugh, but who does not have the blemish of a sexual assault allegation on their record.
Yeah.
And I don't deny for a second that you can make mistakes when you're young and go on and have a good life. And no one's telling Brett Kavanaugh he can't. He can go on and be a very influential judge for the rest of his life. But the Supreme Court is an honor that we bestow upon
so few people.
The select of the select. We are in the 0.01% of the 0.01% will get to be a Supreme Court justice.
Well, and I believe the reason that it's so important that there not be a blemish of this sort is because you think about the cases that Supreme Court justices try. These are things, there's a reason that there's the, you know, the famous phrase, I'll take this all the way to the Supreme Court. They are the highest level of I don't want to say moral, but of upholding justice, of making a decision. And making a decision that can change laws. Think of Roe versus Wade. Think of Brown versus the Board of Education. These are laws that a lot of people opposed. Like, these are rulings that a lot of people opposed. And the reason that they weren't able to question these rulings is because this person was so morally, judicially upstanding. And having a blemish like that on your record, any decision, if he became a Supreme Court justice, any decision that he made, especially one that is potentially controversial, that is going to get some backlash, is going to be very easily questioned or discredited because it's like, well, what the hell does this guy know? I mean, he sexually assaulted someone when he was 17.
And I think the other side of it is it speaks to character, you know?
Yeah.
And if this happened, if this sexual assault took place, that tells you something about his character. And you can be aware of a character flaw and you can work like a dog to overcome that character flaw. And indeed, a great many people do, because very few of us are perfect. I assume there are some perfect people out there in addition to myself. I don't know who they are. Shea Spillane's pretty good most days of the week, but you know, she's got her flaws. And I don't mean to say I'm perfect at all, as we all know I'm not. But
I do swear a lot when I'm not on the radio.
But when the reality of character tends to come out is when people are under tremendous pressure. And there is no greater pressure for a jurist in the United States of America than sitting on the Supreme Court and having to make a decision that will impact millions of lives. One way or another, this needs to come to a resolution. If we cannot come up with any sort of credible allegations against Justice Kavanaugh, I'm okay with Justice Kavanaugh sitting on the Supreme Court. If there seems to be any hint of truth and you know, verifiable bad behavior by Justice Kavanaugh, he has to go. Are we going to get that answer by the time the vote is held next week? Maybe, maybe not. You know, I look at Dianne Feinstein. And by no means am I an overall Feinstein fan. Mm. She's done some good things. She's done some bad things. But she seems to be the only one that actually handled this the right way. She got the letter. She had her questions about it. She gave it to the FBI and left it to the FBI to come back to her and say, yes, there's something here. No, there isn't. And she actually said to Fox News yesterday that she has questions about these allegations and thinks that Blasey Ford may be confused about what happened. That's a Democrat. That is a California Democrat making that statement. So that to me is far more powerful than all of these posturing senators running around calling for FBI investigations that are farcical, that would never happen under any circumstances, and all of the other nonsense that they're using to try and delay this nomination. We need a functioning Supreme Court on the first Monday of October. We are this far through the process, okay? The excuse that I'm not ready to talk to Congress, even though I spent the weekend talking to the Washington Post, does not hold, okay? You have a duty as an American citizen to come forward and say what you know. That is your civic duty. And Justice Kavanaugh, or Judge Kavanaugh, has a responsibility to defend himself against these allegations. But they must be credible, reasonable, provable allegations.
Well, and that's, I mean,
this can't be a vague, it might have happened here, it might have happened there, it might have been this day, it might have been that. Something solid has to be put on the table that he can either say, yes, it happened, or no, it didn't happen, and that can be investigated, and he can either be cleared, or he can be found guilty, or found responsible. If he's found responsible, he's gone.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's the biggest thing, is that obviously anyone can say anything about anybody. I mean, I had, you think about some of the, like, I think about some of the rumors I had spread about myself in high school, and some of them, absolutely true. But
I am far,
a lot of them, complete nonsense.
Can I say that I am far less gay than people in high school accused me of being? Not everybody, but some people. I'm way less gay than people said.
I'm only half as big as a slut than people said.
Yeah, way less gay.
But, I mean, that's the thing, is that obviously anyone can say anything about anyone. I mean, but like you said, if upon investigation there does prove to be, even if it's not the truth that everyone's allegating it, if there is some truth to it, then that's, I mean, there are plenty of people who have never even jaywalked.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think something happened.
No one in Boston, but
I think something happened to Blasey Ford. I would like to know what happened, and I would like to see her get justice for that, and I would like to see her find a way to heal from that. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number on the Tell Mikey D, coming your way in just over 30 minutes with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Coming your way tomorrow is a birthday of someone near and dear and special to this program. So in honor of her birthday, Captain Zoom would like to send her a message here on WMFO Medford.
This is Space Command to Zoom. All systems are go for your message to Molly.
Hey, Molly, it's your birthday. I'm in charge of the stars, and I'm here to say, hey, Molly, you're the big star today. My name is Zoom, and I live on the moon, but I came down to Earth just to sing you this tune. 'Cause Molly, it's your birthday today. A present for you I wanted to find, an outer space creature, a one of a kind. A wild womp, womp, or a cuckoo-choo, a snaffle-crop, or a buzzer-snoo, or maybe a three-eyed tickle-shay for your birthday. Did you ask,
What's a cuckoo-choo?
Well, up on the moon, it's nothing new, but that won't do for you on your birthday. Searched behind the clouds and stars, I even zoomed my bike to Mars. and met my friend, the Saucer Man, and he said,
"Hey, Zoom, I've got the bestest plan. What your friend needs is something new. So how about a song just from you?"
And so tonight, when you're in bed, I'll be singing to you as I zoom overhead. Singing Molly, happy birthday. Singing Molly, happy birthday. Singing Molly, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Molly. See you next year.
Hi, this is James Brown, soul brother number one. Always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Some make pets of birds and fish and dogs and alley cats. That's not the way I like to play. I'm tired of all these. I need a very special friend. Won't you help me, please?
I want a monster to be my
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You're listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call and chime in, you can do so at 855-915-WMFO. And now for everyone's new favorite gay couple.
I just for the record, I am typing into the log for the show. Derek and Shay discuss Ernie and Bert's sexuality. that's where we're at, kids.
Can you get me a screenshot of that?
Welcome to 2017. Is that what this one? No, this is 18. 2018. I can't take it anymore, Shay. I can't take it anymore.
Oh, yes. In an interview on September 16th, former Sesame Street writer Mark Saltzman basically told Queerty, this news outlet, it's an LGBTQ news outlet, that his real life relationship with his partner inspired the Bert and Ernie dynamic, and as such he viewed the characters as a loving couple. Ever since he said this, it of course has just exploded,
right,
all over the place.
Well, you can sort of watch this thing play out in real time on the internet.
Which is absurd. I mean,
because this guy was writing Ernie and Bert in the 1980s. Okay, 1983. I think
was
is when
say,
he started.
He wrote 85. So yeah. he worked on 31 episodes of Sesame Street between the years 1985 and 1998.
And he's like, all right, we got two guys, you know, sharing a the thing that's always been odd.
I always thought that they were a gay couple. I always thought that was implied.
So did I. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we were talking about this when I was in college in the 1980s, and everyone was like, Ernie and Bert, they're gay, right? Yeah. And everybody's like, yeah, they're gay.
Well, and it's just, I believe it's Dave Chappelle that has a whole bit about Sesame Street where, I mean, everyone, so it's known that Sesame Street, it was common knowledge, I think that Sesame Street was conceived as a children's show for kids growing up in an urban environment. So because, you know, so many children's shows, it would be them like living on a farm or like in the woods or, and you know, a kid growing up in Brooklyn can't really identify with that. Whereas with Sesame Street, they're like, okay, we're going to have something that will appeal to urban raised children. But I think it's Dave Chappelle, has a whole bit about how, like, for example, Cookie Monster is the drug addict in the urban environment. Oscar the Grouch is the homeless guy, the ornery homeless guy. And Bert and Ernie are the gay couple. Like, it's just, and everything, I really want to...
Don't they represent the seven deadly sins?
I was going to say, I really want to verify that this is Dave Chappelle. I'm not doing it justice.
Like Oscar's envy and Cookie Monster's gluttony.
Gluttony.
The Count is greed.
I'm saying, and then the count is like, I forget if he says that he's the pimp or he's like the swindler of the neighborhood.
Ernie and Bert, of course, are lust in this scenario. But it's like, 1980s, like... political science class, like my dorm, the floor of my dorm freshman year, the dining halls, everybody's like, Ernie and Bert are gay,
it is,
right?
Dave Chappelle.
And everybody's like, yes, Ernie and Bert are gay. It's about as well duh as Liberace, as Joel said earlier. It's about as well duh as Liberace coming out being like, I'm gay. And it's like, yeah, we kind of figured that out.
Yeah.
We kind of knew that.
Well, and like, it reminds me of, I remember my brother had a friend in high school, we knew he was gay. And it was just known, and it was fine. And then he came out, and everyone was like, and? It's not a big deal. But what's really bothering me about this,
well, here's
first
the,
of all, like...
But here's the problem, before we get to that. The and is coming from the Sesame Workshop themselves, who, after everybody is online and basically being like, yes, finally, Ernie and Bert are out, well, duh, and all the other reactions, the Sesame Workshop, now part of HBO. So it's not even like they're looking for those sweet, sweet NPR, PBS federal dollars anymore. They're getting paid for by HBO, not a bastion of conservative programming by any stretch of the imagination. They feel compelled to say this, quote... They were created to teach preschoolers that people can be good friends with those who are very different from themselves. Even though they are identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, as most Sesame Street Muppets do, they remain puppets and do not have a sexual orientation.
Well, that's the thing, is that all of this uproar now of Saltzman's kind of walking back what he said, where he's saying, well, you know, it's just that... it's just that they get along really well. Like, I forget, like he said that his relationship with his partner did inform a lot of the Sesame Street scripts that he wrote, but he never intended Bert and Ernie to be seen as definitively gay. But what's been really bothering me about this is that, first of all, everyone's been speculating about this since the show came out in 1969.
Well, I think, in the first couple of years it was on the air, Ernie and Bert were clearly influenced by The Odd Couple.
Absolutely. And I think Felix and Oscar.
Yeah, I think you could get away with like the Felix and Oscar thing. Yeah. But then as we get into the late 70s and the early 80s and the Stonewall riots are happening and, you know, gay pride is becoming a thing, yeah, people are starting to look at Ernie and Bert and they're like, why do they sleep in the same bedroom?
Yeah. Well, and even...
why don't they have separate bedrooms?
The cover, a New Yorker cover in 2013, depicted them very obviously, very intentionally as a gay couple,
yeah,
to commemorate the Supreme Court ruling that declared the Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. And what's really bothering me about this, though, is
they
that...
they are common law married, by the way.
I know. They've lived together for almost 50 years.
Yeah, they are common law married at
this
point.
What is it, seven?
Yeah.
That makes it...
yeah. So they've been common law married since 76.
But what really, what bothers me is that, you know, all of, so many people are coming out of the woodwork, and it's like, who gives a, they're puppets. Like, why does it even matter? But there's these parents coming out being like, I don't want, like, it's inappropriate to have my child watch something that's sexual in nature. It's like, okay, I forget the exact quote, but there was somebody who came out saying that there shouldn't be a sexual aspect to Sesame Street. I just laughed as I read this because, first of all, they're puppets.
Yeah.
Second of all, if there's anything that I know about love and relationships, and it's love, being in a relationship does not, often it does involve some form of sexuality, but it doesn't all, like, it's, that's not the baseline. It's not like, even if this is entirely true, even if the intention from the very beginning was to have Bert and Ernie be a gay couple, even if that is true, it's not like they're dry humping on Sesame Street. I mean, there are couples, and I feel bad for them, but there are couples that never sleep together. But there are couples that live in separate bedrooms. Like, it's the whether or not their life partners has nothing to do. There's no sexual anything. You know what I mean? There's no sexual anything.
By the way,
involved.
Isn't this the same Sesame Workshop that came up with a character with AIDS? Or with HIV, like HIV Muppet a few years ago, to teach kids that people with HIV are okay to hang around.
Yeah.
That is way more sexual than anything that ever happened with Ernie and Bert, okay? Ernie and Bert are probably the longest running and most positive representation of a gay couple in television.
Well, and especially considering when the show came out, you have to think about the fact that, I mean, maybe a little more progressive by 1969, but very shortly before that, there was a great deal of men who just had quote unquote roommates.
Yeah.
And were bachelors.
Yeah.
But, you know, behind closed doors. But that I guess is my point with the whole sexual thing, is that it is behind closed doors, whatever, but it's not, nothing, much like the men of the mid-60s who were bachelor roommates, so to speak. It's not like they were wearing it on their sleeve, nor to Bert and Ernie. Like, I can't even believe that this is something that we have to discuss.
You do, because it's, you know, it's the topic of the day.
I mean, I'm not saying, like, that this is something stupid for us to be discussing. I'm just saying that, like, the fact that it's this huge uproar about these puppets, one of which, though I did make the joke on Facebook yesterday that I've always known that they were gay, though I am made to be a bit skeptical by the fact that Ernie has never coerced Bert into waxing his unibrow. I mean, most gay men that I know, they're gonna do the manscaping very well. That's, oh goodness, right. do we have a caller? Derek's smiling. It's terrifying.
So one of our regular callers just chimed in and said he thought they were either siblings or step-siblings, given the very high rates of divorce in the late 60s and early 70s, which was true. As soon as the birth control pill came along, suddenly divorce rates went through the roof. I don't know why that happened.
Shocker.
But yeah.
Theoretically, though, riddle me this. Theoretically, they could be step-siblings and a gay couple.
Yep. Well, okay, now you're in creepy territory. Now you're in really creepy territory.
I had to toss it out there.
The interesting thing about,
if we're talking about two puppets being gay, I don't think that anything is really off the table in terms of the discussion.
Here's the interesting thing about Ernie and Bert, and it always has been. Clearly, these two are involved in some kind of a relationship that neither one of them can just walk away from.
Oh yeah,
that has always been true of those two characters.
No matter what, they're codependent.
And the other thing that's true of those two characters is that they have an equal power dynamic. This isn't a man and a woman. This is, remember, we're starting we're starting in 1969 when women are meek and over in the corner and men are doing everything.
That's when we just started burning our bras.
Yes. So to see that equal power dynamic and that relationship that they can't walk away from, of course there is some sort of loving bond between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And you know what? If that's a homosexual bond or a heterosexual bond between two friends...
I would say like a platonic bond.
Who cares?
And that's...
Why would you deny... The thing I don't get is why the Sesame Workshop feels the need to deny it.
And I think that's my ultimate point with everyone getting all up in arms about this.
I know you don't want Orrin Hatch calling you in front of Congress, but seriously, what harm is done?
But I mean, it's just like it's him saying that, and that like that's the thing is that first when he like kind of walked back what he said, I thought that he was kind of being a wuss, but then I understood. That I'm talking about Salzman, the writer that said this in the first place. But then I understood that he was, by saying that it was based on him and his partner, he wasn't necessarily implying that they were intended to be a homosexual couple. He was merely saying that the dynamic of their relationship he drew from his own life.
He said that his his experiences informed the way that he wrote those characters as a gay man in a happy monogamous relationship.
Yeah, like it's just like with Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill. They wrote Superbad based on their high school experience. And are the characters that are portrayed exactly who they were in high school? No. But they are simply drawing from the experience that they had to create these fictional characters.
Well,
and that
the
is
hazy,
all...
drug-addled memories of those experiences, because trust me, none of that actually happened.
That's my whole point, is that all of that was fictional, but they did draw upon their real-life experience to write it. And that is all this writer was saying, was that... You know, there's these two men who share their lives together, whether that means it's romantic, platonic, sexual, what have you, doesn't matter. The only point he was trying to make is that he established that dynamic of those two contrasting personalities based on his real life experience. He was not saying, oh, this is me and my life partner. Like, that. It's not what he was saying.
I would just like to
see... And everyone just jumped, down his throat.
But everyone jumped down his throat because the Sesame Workshop backed off from it. And what they should have done is just come out and said, two words, it's true, period.
Yeah.
That's
and,
it.
And that's what... That's what's so absurd about the fact that they did that, too, is that it's like, you're really... He's the writer. It's not like some random person. It's not like if I did an interview and was like, I think Bert and Ernie are gay. This is the guy who wrote a lot of the things that developed these characters. It's, if anyone's going to know what they were based on, what the intention behind this character development is, it's going to be the guy who...
Who's writing
it? Did it. Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he was not the original writer. He was not the only writer. He was one in a series of writers. We know that Ernie and Bert probably aren't related to each other because they're different colors. And in Muppet World,
they're different colors.
If you're related...
By the way, it's yellow and orange if you were trying to search your brain for what colors.
In Muppet World, if you're related to another Muppet, you're like the same species of monster, or you're the same color or something like that.
That's true.
It's like that all throughout. You know, you can sort of tell...
Not just Muppet World. I mean, think about the show Doug. That's what I always think about. It's like, I love that Skeeter's entire family is turquoise.
Yeah. But that's sort of like borrowing from Henson, because Henson did it that way. But it's like, the problem with Sesame Workshop coming out and disputing this is you basically tell the haters and you tell the people who are anti-gay and opposed to any kind of gay representation that your opinion matters and your opinion is valuable. And as much as
and yell as loud as you want.
As much as I do not like to condemn anyone, as much as I don't like to sit here and take a side and say you are wrong, if you are that virulently anti-gay that you can't deal with the idea that a couple of Muppets might have a thing for each other that you never ever see on television, but that they might be in a happy, loving relationship on their own time when they're not entertaining the kids.
Behind the proverbial scenes.
If you are that anti-gay, you are wrong. It's that simple. And your opinion should not be validated in this day and age.
Yeah, like, dude,
we have enough hate going around for enough different people that we don't need to foment any more of it. And that's exactly what Sesame Workshop did. They basically said, oh, no, wait. All you people who are upset about there might be
gays. We're going to validate you.
We might have te gays hanging out in the thing. No. There's no gays. There's no. No sexuality at all. Meantime, there's like 500 people on DeviantArt doing like slash fiction and drawings of Ernie and Bert going at it.
Well, and that's the thing. Like you said, all they had to say is they could have said, yeah, it's true. They could have even said, who cares?
No,
like, what difference does it make?
What they should have said is, it's true. And then let everybody who was going to freak out and make noise about it
on their own time.
Because here's what's going to happen. Those people are on the wrong side of history. Those people are on the wrong side of love and humanity and decency. And they are going to be called out and they're going to be pushed back into the margin where they belong.
And that's, I mean...
And then we don't have to have this conversation anymore.
That's what I find the most hilarious about this is... I mean, people who are bigoted, people who are against homosexuality, against anyone doing what they want, the absurdity in their way of thinking is so well pointed out by this, because they're getting up in arms about puppets being gay.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, how much free time do you have on your hands? How diluted is your brain that this is something worth caring about and shaking your fist at? Like, it's if anything, it's almost poetic, because it points to the absurdity of that way of thinking.
Ernie is very clearly a bottom. Just going to put that out there for all of you. Ernie, not only are Ernie and Bert gay.
I'm going to have to agree with that.
Ernie is totally a bottom. 855-915-9636. Ernie and Bert, you guys be you guys. And
get yours.
Yeah, go. They should be demanding some empowerment. You know, they really should. 855-915-9636. This is The Big Picture. Derek Gary, Shea Spillane on the Tell Mike ED, coming your way in less than 10 minutes. But before we get to that and everything you need to know about the Boston music scene, we have our favorite things from the past week. And the strangest things from the past week coming up in just a minute here on WMFO Medford.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Yeah!
MFO Medford 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture. I'm Shea Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. And we're going to finish things off with two of our favorite segments to cap off the show with. First, we're going to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. And for me, this is actually a super personal one, but equally as important as the other stuff that I talk about.
Gay puppets.
Obviously gay puppets. No, nothing like that. So my father is a big walker. He's always been really into like long distance walking. He's done the Avon Breast Cancer Walk in literally every city in the country that hosts it. I'm not exaggerating. But last year he walked from Stockbridge to Boston on the path that's made famous by the James Taylor song, Sweet Baby James.
Wow.
Yeah. And ended up raising $50,000 in pledges for the Elizabeth Stone House, which is a charity house in Dorchester, which houses and counsels victims of domestic violence, basically gives them a safe haven to go to. This year, he started yesterday. He is totally outdoing himself. I still can't believe that my father is capable of this, because I wouldn't be able to. But he's walking again for Elizabeth Stonehouse, because it's a charity that's so close to his heart. But this time he is walking from Yankee Stadium in the Bronx to Fenway Park.
Wow.
Here in Boston. Yes.
Is he stopping in Uncasville?
I have no idea where he's going to stop. Dad, make sure you drink plenty of water and get adequate
sleep. Stop in Uncasville.
But this year he's trying to double the money he raised last year. So he's trying to go for $100,000. And he still needs more donations to help out this great cause. And he takes nothing. He funds this all himself in terms of where he stays, all of that. Every cent that he gets donated to this really wonderful charity.
Wow.
So he still has a lot to go. He's in the middle. I think it's going to take him 10 days. But so he's in the middle of the walk right now, or he just started yesterday, but you can still donate. It would be really awesome if you did. If you go to walkingforelizabethstonehouse.com, it can tell you all about his latest walk, the walk he did last year, how to donate, and really every little bit counts, even if it's $5. Every little bit counts. And I volunteered at this place, and it's a wonderful institution, and they can use the funding. They're saving people's lives, and that's not cheap.
So the URL once again.
Yes, is walkingforelizabethstonehouse.com.
All right, I now feel like a complete consumer whore.
You're going to say something about Legos, aren't you?
No. kids, if you're a consumer whore like I am and you like miniature versions of old game consoles, you can add the PlayStation to your collection. Announced today, the PlayStation Classic will have 20 games and a price of $99 when it launches on December 3rd. Pre-order now. It will sell out. Final Fantasy VII is here. Tekken 3 is here. Those are the only two really cool games that have been announced. They announced five of them. Ridge Racer Type 4 is going to be here. Jumping Flash and Wild Arms, not really going down in the list of the greatest PlayStation 1 games of all time. They will be announcing more in the coming weeks. The pre-orders will be gone by then. I would expect to see Crash Bandicoot. Maybe we get some Resident Evil. Don't hold your breath for Metal Gear Solid being on here, because Konami has totally pooched that franchise.
It's one of my favorite ways to say someone screwed something up.
If you want a cute little PlayStation 1, pre-order now. They will be out just in time for Christmas.
WMFO Medford, 91.5. We're wrapping things up here at the big picture with That's a Thing That Happened. And for me, I couldn't believe, I guess the amount of money that it was warrants it, but I couldn't believe how long this guy got. A Texas man who pled guilty to stealing more than $1.2 million worth of fajitas while acting as a public service has been sentenced to 50 years in prison. Gilberto Escamilla, 53, was employed at the Daryl B. Hester Juvenile Detention Center in San Benito, Texas until August 2017, when it was discovered they'd been placing orders for fajitas using county funds and then selling them for his own profit since December of 2008. When sentenced, Escamilla was also served with a maximum fine of $10,000 on top of the $1,251,578.72 that he was ordered to pay back for the cost of the fajitas. According to the Brownsville Herald, Escamilla's scene unraveled in August of last year after a delivery driver with Labatt Food Service phoned the detention center to give kitchen employees a heads up that an 800-pound delivery of fajitas had arrived, causing employees to immediately become suspicious because the minors of the detention center were not served fajitas. The delivery driver insisted on delivering them and said that he had been for the last 9 years. After being fired and arrested, Escamilla's house was searched by police, who found several pounds of fajitas in his refrigerator and freezer. Of all, can you imagine going to prison? What are you in for? Oh, I stole a bunch of fajitas.
New Hampshire. More fun of the Merrimack Valley, kids.
Oh, goodness.
Anthony Helinski 34 years old, of Lawrence, surrendered to Salem police today after learning a warrant had been issued for his arrest. Why was a warrant issued for his arrest? Because video that circulated widely over the internet over the weekend showed a man insert his young daughter into a crane machine to steal a Nintendo Switch and a Nintendo DS. Police had been using the video to try and find the suspect, who turned out to be Anthony Helinski, 34 years old. Mr. Helinski, until today, was working as an engineering teacher at an Andover middle school. Andover Superintendent Shelley Berman issued the following statement. One of our teachers at the Daugherty Middle School was involved in an incident in Salem, New Hampshire last week. Andover Public Schools is fully cooperating with authorities. The teacher has been placed on administrative leave pending the